episode of the Energy Stoners Cafe is sponsored by the Black Arts Matter Network, blackartsmatter.net. This episode is an excerpt from my public access TV show, Talk with TQ, recorded at the Bean Runner Cafe. Welcome to the Energy Stoners Cafe. My name is Toni Quest, and I'm really happy that you're here. I like to interview the most interesting people I can find on the planet. So grab a cup of coffee, sit down, relax, and listen. You're going to find that these guests are so intriguing, you'll wonder why you didn't know about them before. Hi. As always, I try to get the most interesting people I can find on the planet. Sometimes they're right in my own backyard. Tonight, we have a great guest on. This man is very, very dear to my heart. He is the owner of the Bean Runner Cafe. And the Bean Runner Cafe is really important to me because his wife, also is a co-owner, were very, very kind to me at one point in my life when I was in Peekskill. And I'm forever grateful to them, reaching out, helping me, recognizing me as an artist, and always doing the right thing. I could go on, but I won't, because I really want to introduce you to the owner of the Bean Runner Cafe, Mr. Ted Bitter. Ted, you made it to the show.
Thank you very much.
I know you had to squeeze me in because you're just so busy all the time. So tell me, I know that you have the cafe here and you do other things within the community. You do things so humbly that people don't always know what you're doing. They just sort of reap the benefits of it. Mm. I want to talk to you about the Bean Runner Cafe. You feature jazz artists here on the weekend.
Yep.
And I would say in Westchester, this is the place to be. Before you, there was a place on the southern side of the county called DeFemio's, and now it's at the northern side of the county, the Bean Runner. How did you get involved in featuring jazz musicians and all kinds of music here at Bean Runner?
Well, it's a strange beginning. That is our stage. That is not a stage. That's how it started, believe it or not.
Oh.
If you were to go there and move the carpet, there's a trap door there, and there is a large sewage pipe extending about 4-5 inches above the ground. So we had to build that up to cover that sewage pipe. And we said, that's a stage.
Oh.
And we decided to start bringing in music. I always was a new person who loved music, recorded music anywhere. But we decided to start doing live music because we had a stage. And we had a piano, and I started buying pieces of equipment. We started asking musicians to come in and play. The first thing we did was a drummer named Bob Meyer, a jazz drummer. He came in and said, let's do like a jazz jam. And he came in with himself and a bass player, and a lot of jazz musicians would come in and do a jazz jam. And we started doing that, and it just evolved from there. To be honest with you, one of the great stories is about Alexis Cole. She moved into Peekskill and was living up the street, and the first night she was here, Steve Frieder, who's a great young saxophonist, his dad lived across the hall. He said, hey, we're going across the street to this little place for a jazz jam. You want to come? And she came, and that was her first night performing in Peekskill at the Bob Meyer Jazz Jam. And it just, the rest is history. It just blossomed from there.
So now it's every Friday and Saturday night.
Yeah, exactly. Some Sundays, to be honest.
And some Sundays as well.
Right.
You feature reggae music here often?
Actually, we created sort of a format where we wanted to do something a little bit more than jazz. Mm-hmm. And we said Friday nights is going to be open for every genre of music. So we do salsa on the first Friday of every month and reggae on the second Friday of every month. Because people like dancing, coming out, just having fun. Jazz is a great musical genre, but you're not going to get too much dancing there. And so we wanted to get something a little more up-tempo because Peekskill was not anymore. but it was a quiet, sleepy town. And having live music and a more up-tempo R&B, reggae, salsa, sort of changes that. And people come out and have a great time dancing and just almost like house parties.
Yeah.
That's the kind of environment we create here. It's almost like a house party. Come out and you dance and everybody knows each other. It's a Peekskill family sort of, because most of the people who come here know each other, and they get together here as a once a month or twice a month and just have a good time. Let their hair hang down, as we say.
That's very, very good. And also I find that even though people do know each other here, I find that people from out of town will come here. I often bring people here, you know, right. Either during the day for lunch, because you right. serve a fantastic lunch every day and breakfast every day. Your coffee is sensational.
Thank you.
You have a great wine list. It's short, but it's good.
Yeah, and, it is.
Yeah, but it's very welcoming.
Right.
It's very welcoming. I find this place to be one of the more welcoming places in Peekskill, although I feel welcome in most of the venues in Peekskill.
Yeah, same here.
And I thank you for that, because you know, I always feel a little bit like a transplant because I'm from the southern part of the county.
Mm-hmm.
And so to come here in a place like this and feel so welcome is important. You also feature visual artists in this venue.
Right.
Like today, during this interview, we have Rivden Fox Hall,
mm-hmm.
and she has some great photography on the wall. I had no idea she was a photographer.
Yeah, right.
You know, and now I know. And you feature her work here. You featured my work here. You
right.
featured many people in here, great artists
right.
in here, a lot of great artists in Peekskill, from Peekskill and sometimes out of the area as well.
Right, right.
We talked a little bit, it might have been with a previous interview, about what the original venue for jazz was. It was DeFemio's restaurant in Yonkers. And I never thought they'd never have anything up here. I never thought they'd have anything up here back then.
Right.
I never thought I'd be in this town
right.
back then. And now you're the destination now for jazz.
Yeah. Well, there was a little bit of a jazz venue here when I first came.
Mm-hmm.
It was on North Division Street called One Station Plaza.
Right.
Dave Finucane had that. But it was very small, and he didn't have a consistent booking. It wasn't a jazz club per se, but it was a sort of a music thing.
Mm-hmm.
But he did have some nice jazz musicians there also. So they were sort of a little bit before me.
Yeah, a little bit, but not that much.
Right, not that much.
Not that much
yeah.
before you.
Right.
You know, and your venue here has become very successful. It appears to be, and I hope you are. During COVID, I see you have an outdoor venue. You have one in the back. You
right.
always had
patio
that.
Patio in the back, yeah.
But you also had a beautiful venue. You have a beautiful outdoor venue in the front
right.
on Esther Street, which is
right.
where the restaurant is located.
Mm-hmm.
How did you come up with that idea, and how did you manage to get them to
well,
give you part of the street?
To be honest with you, it was something I had been doing for quite a few years, but I was only able to do it once or twice a year to get the permit from the city because the street was not closed.
Right.
It's probably the only one block street in Peekskill with two open, that's not a dead end. And a group came in and decided to work with us, a group called Peekskill Walks, a new group in town, some of the new people moving in town.
Mm-hmm.
And they had an idea, let's close the street and make it a park. We couldn't make it a public park because of all the restrictions and so on. But we worked with them to have the street closed and open the businesses on the street. And with that, it created a venue. We had the artists paint the stones out front. And I spent quite a lot of money to bring in plants, palm trees, to create an environment in the summertime, sort of a tropical environment.
Mm-hmm.
I'm from the Caribbean, and I love that sort of
yes.
banana plant. You know.
And then I'm from New York, and then we dream about those sort of things, and we love it here.
Yeah.
No, really, no, it is. It does have a very lovely venue. I noticed inside what you've done in lieu of having plexiglass everywhere, you have like these live plants between every table.
Right, right. Since we have to have the spacing,
mm-hmm.
instead of having dead space, you put plants in. And the plants create a nice feel,
mm-hmm.
and it's just a nice look. I grew up with plants, mm-hmm. you know, and I've always had plants in my apartment.
Mm-hmm.
I spent a lot of time in apartments in Brooklyn. I grew up in Brooklyn, and we always had houseplants. Mm-hmm. Houseplants was a big thing at the time. I remember going to the plant center on 23rd Street and picking up plants and bringing them home. Yeah, there's a huge plant center on 23rd Street on the west side in Manhattan. So I'm into plants. So it's sort of an extension of my entire upbringing and growing. That was my thought for this place in the first place.
Yeah.
You know, I had the kind of house in Brooklyn. My mom was the kind of person who she would cook, you know, Jamaican food, and all my friends in the neighborhood would come over. We'd hang out in the basement and we'd have. So when I retired, I thought maybe I should do that, you know, just carry on my mom's tradition of having a place where people come like family and hang out and just do things.
It has a Caribbean feel.
Exactly. It's just evolved into what it is right now, those humble beginnings.
No, it's a beautiful venue.
Thanks.
And it's a very welcoming atmosphere here. The quieter, but not super quiet during the day.
Right.
You know, I think if I've seen people come in here, you know, with their laptops, which is typical for a coffee house. But I think that this place is... It's dear to my heart. I'm prejudiced. I really like this place because I love you guys.
Yeah.
I do. You mean a lot to me in this city. Yeah. I consider you, I was like, in my mind, you're like the father of Peekskill. Because you also, I really feel that. I feel it's kind of true. And it's also because you work with the young people in Peekskill quite a bit.
Right.
You work with track team.
Right.
And tell me something about that, because I hear it's really not easy to work with children and also to work under the circumstances that you're working?
Well, I was a world-class runner for many years. When I got out of the military, I was struggling with PTSD and was going through a lot of difficulties and gaining a lot of weight. My wife gave me a sweatsuit and I started running. I could always run, but I was not one to believe that I had any talented running. But I started training in Prospect Park in Brooklyn. And within a couple of years, I was really surprising myself in running, started running with a strong road running movement in Brooklyn. And I retired from running and came up here and decided to just go on the track again to revive my career. And I saw a group of kids running with some people and they didn't really look like they knew what they were doing. So I asked them if I could help them with the kids. And that was like 24, 25 years ago. And I started with them. And the coach at the team at the time, we went to a meet. And I wasn't the coach. I was just helping him out. We went to a meet, the Colgate Women's Games, which is a very influential women's game for only women in Pratt Institute. And we were supposed to meet the next morning for practice. And I got a call that he passed away, had a heart attack, and passed away. They lived in Peekskill Apartments, was that Peekskill Towers? And his daughter was an outstanding athlete. She got a full scholarship to University of Florida. So I took the team from there and been working with them. It's called the Westchester Striders, that was the team. And I've been working with them ever since, you know.
With the school system?
No, it's not with the school system. It's a private club. We just work with kids. I work with kids from 6 to 14. Mm-hmm. Usually when they reach high school level, they move into high school, start running for their high school. It's difficult, but I leave them alone so they work in high school. If the high school has a good program. If the high school does not have a good program, and these are athletes who are capable to achieve college scholarships, they stay with me. Even though they will work with the high school program, they stay with me for a while until they get scholarships. We've been very fortunate in getting young athletes up here in Westchester County, many, many scholarships, many. I think it's over 20 in the last 15 years.
That's wonderful.
At least two a year.
That's wonderful, Ted. Yeah. It's really, to me, it's ultimately about education.
Well, yeah, right. Lots of the kids, more of the kids are the athletes that I have who don't get scholarships, use the discipline, the dedication, determination, desire, that's the four D's
okay.
that I instill in them, to move on and have great academic careers. Many of them are in lots of the Ivy League schools in the country, and many of them are great professionals in the years that I've been around.
Wow, it promotes physical fitness.
Well, yeah, right.
And that's important. How do you feel that you contribute to that? Because I see in the generation that's coming up, I'm noticing that, I mean, I was a fat kid, you know, but I see a lot more of it in this the generation that's coming up. But you're working with children athletically, and so you're promoting physical fitness with them.
Well, of course, promoting physical fitness, but it's more promoting a certain amount of self-discipline, you know, the idea that you can achieve anything you want if you really work hard at it. Those are really important things for young children to learn. And you lay the footprint down and they follow that footprint, and they just keep moving in the direction that builds success. To me, and I push this to the kids all the time, if you see yourself doing it, you will do it. You know, and I tell them all the time, the difference between talent and greatness is excuses. If you make excuses, you'll never be great. The great ones never make excuses, you know? And these are the things we follow, you know? The team motto is that hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard. So we have a lot of talented athletes and a lot of less talented athletes, but the less talented ones who work harder will always come out on top. If you're talented and don't work hard, Someone less talented will beat you.
And you have a diverse stable of runners. You have a diverse group that you're working with. And we talked about it earlier. You have students, or I'd say athletes, that you're mm-hmm. working with, runners, and they're from such diverse backgrounds.
Well, right now the team has, it's the largest it's been since I've been coaching. It's about 45 children, ranging in age from 6 to 16. And they're from varying backgrounds, from 7 or 8 countries, from Ghana, Guyana, Jamaica, Korea, Peru, Mexico, Guatemala, Ecuador, Nigeria, and of course, from the United States. It's just a vast array of the melting pot of what America's all about. It's just a great, diverse group of kids, and to watch them get together. I have parents who told me we brought our child here to get that experience of diversity. Where we live, there's not enough of that. There's almost none of that.
Yeah.
Right here, within 2 miles of Peekskill. So they come here to get not only the athletic training, but the mixture and the diversity of having friends from different cultures and backgrounds. It's an education.
It's a beautiful thing.
Yep, it is.
It really is. It's a beautiful thing. I love the fact that you do what you do, because I've seen people do this, but not to the extent you're talking about. Coaching 45 children.
6 days a week.
6 days a week, and you're very dedicated to it. What makes you so passionate about this?
A couple of reasons. Early in my life, my mom migrated to the United States when I was 5 years old. And I did not see her again till I was 15, when she was able to bring me here.
Wow.
And in those years, I guess you could call it abandonment issues,
mm-hmm.
it led to anger, frustration, and rebelliousness. I was a very rebellious kid. I always had some talent, but because of my rebellious nature, any form of authority, I rebelled against. So I didn't get that. Those things that most kids really need in life, someone to guide them, to show them, to really care about them. It wasn't there for me. That was number one. The second experience I had that gives me great passion with children is that I was in Vietnam, and to watch the loss of life of so many children in the Vietnam War was devastating for me.
Yeah.
It took me a long time to get over that. I still haven't gotten over it. So I just thought the thing to do is give back to children. And to be honest with you, I'm not a psychiatrist, but when you go through that sort of abandonment early in life, your inner child is left there. So what happens to me is at 77 years old, my inner child is still 5 or 6.
You're a pair of sevens? Come on.
Yeah, I am a pair of sevens. My inner child is still about 5 or 6. So it comes out with those children. And we have a lot of fun. And it's very rewarding for me dealing with those young kids to watch them grow. And I wouldn't change that for anything in the world.
They're learning sportsmanship, you know, how to be a good sport, you know. I think that to me, that's the way I look at the competitive sports. They're competing against themselves as because they're runners as well.
Well, what I teach them early is that track is not a team sport. It's an individual sport. It's you, the distance, and time. The other runners are just there to help you do your best. You're competing against the distance and the clock. That's why they have a clock at the finish. So I tell them, if you're running a quarter mile and you're running 60 seconds and nobody else is running faster than 60, you're going to win. So let's focus on time. And that's Nike uses that. It's all about time.
it is very much about, I never thought of it that way.
Yeah, but it's all about time.
I imagine it really does something for a young mind to have these, you know, the right words instilled in them as they compete.
Well, yeah, right.
Against themselves.
And I push when we talk about, as the kids come in and I start talking to them and they're old enough to understand, we talk about your PR. Your PR is your personal record. So every time you step on the track, you're looking to achieve a PR. And I'll show them videos of athletes who lost, but is very happy. He lost the gold medal in the Olympics, but he's very happy. And when they asked him what happened, he said, I lost, but I had a PR.
Oh, that's very interesting.
Exactly. Okay. Watch him. I look at Tyson Gay, one of the greatest American runners ever, who's probably the fastest American in the 100 meters. He lost to Usain Bolt. Took it hard, but when he went at the interview, he said, I got my PR.
Oh, okay.
And he was very happy about that, even more so than losing the gold medal, because he achieved his best ever. And that's what it's all about.
So it sounds like it's about mindset.
Well, every sport is 50% mental.
Yeah, 50%.
At least.
Okay. I'll go for the mental part, I think so.
Yeah, right.
And the other 50% is like physical skill.
Well, that's what I was told. I tell the kids all the time when they think it's really hard, I said, you know, what you're doing right now, you're only at 40% of your body's capability. So there's 60% more that you can achieve.
Yeah, you really...
It's just a motivational tool.
It's a good tool because you're inspiring. It's all about being inspired so we can achieve it. Is it not?
Yeah, it is. It is. Yeah.
You know, you're very, very generous of spirit.
Well, when it comes to track, which is my sport, I ran for 20 years nonstop. I don't remember missing a day, regardless of what the temperature was. So I didn't make excuses.
Yeah, so you're one of those people, it's like 10 below, and you're out there running.
Yeah, right. I tell the kids they hate it. I said the sweat would fall down my cheeks and would freeze into icicles.
Wow, that's severe, you know?
Yeah, right.
But it must be so satisfying. It must be extraordinarily satisfying.
Well, they're tired of hearing. Okay, coach, we don't want to hear what you did.
Because we don't want to be out here in this cold. But
we don't want to hear your stories of cold weather.
But you're doing such an outstanding good job for people, I mean, for children in particular.
Yeah, right. It's really extremely rewarding, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, there are frustrations, to be honest with you. Some of the frustrations are, right now for me, I don't think I'm getting enough cooperation from the city, the school district, and the ability to use the facilities that we have here.
Mm-hmm.
But we're working on it, you know? We're not able to use the brand new track in the field right now because of certain restrictions.
Why can't you use the brand new track?
Well, the school district has guidelines and rules about the track. When they built the track, they had a set of rules and costs and reasons to use the track. And I'm having a difficult time getting them to bend to that. They see my team as an organization. I'm not an organization, it's a small club. I charge my parents less than a dollar a day for the kids to come. It's volunteer. I never make a penny. We have no paid staff. It's me and parents who want to help their kids. And the funds we have just buys equipment. I try to have the best equipment for the kids to work with so that they can achieve great success. Our coaching methods is college level coaching, you know, because that's what I do the research and I take the courses. You know, you have to take all kinds of courses every year in order to coach kids. It's required by USATF, which is USA Track and Field, which is the governing body of the sport in the country. And we are one of the best teams in the country at many levels, especially at cross country. Since I was a distance runner, I focus on that. So we're working it out with the school district, you know, that they will allow us to use the facilities, particularly now in the winter. Because of COVID, we don't have any indoor facilities. So the kids will have to run outside the entire year, regardless of what the temperature is. Wow. Yeah, well, they did that last year, so you know, it creates intestinal fortitude.
Intestinal, I can imagine.
Well, you know, once they go inside to run, it's a dream. If you're running outside in 20 degrees temperature, and you get inside in a nice warm stadium, you know, so.
So I imagine they were watching the New York Marathon last Sunday.
Well, the kids, to be honest with you. The hardest thing for me in coaching, I think for you to be a successful athlete in any sport, you have to be a student of the sport. I'm a student of the sport. I can tell you records in almost every distance, Olympic records in every distance in many Olympics, because I'm a student of the sport. They don't see it that way. I can't get them to watch meets or even watch the better athletes perform. They don't do it. I don't know why. It's something I have a hard time getting them to do. Once they get on the phone or the video, it's video games. They don't watch live sports or anything like that. So it's a tough call, today's generation, to get them to be a student of the sport. You might get one or two who's like that, but most of them, even some of my best athletes, they tell me, I can't watch a track meet, it's boring.
Unless I'm in it.
Exactly.
Unless I'm in it.
Exactly.
I can imagine, yeah.
Right, so it's tough.
Well, you do such good work, and I want to talk to you more about this, especially the track.
Okay.
I think it's important, and we'll revisit this. I want to talk to you about it, because maybe when the weather changes again, I'm impressed, and I'm also a little dismayed at the same time that it's not being made easier for you.
It's a tough call. And I understand one of the problems is the high school systems take a different approach to coaches who coach kids. We spend a lot of time coaching the kids and teach them at a college level. A lot of high school coaches are not coaches, we're never runners. Whatever the school uses to select their coaching staff, a lot of the coaching staff does not know enough about the sport or haven't been in the sport long enough. So when they get a kid who's been with me since they were 7 years old, they know drills, they know A skip, B skip, all these drills that I teach them, mm-hmm. and how to start, how to accelerate, what your power phases, all these things about sport, about the sport of track that they don't know. And they go, the kid says, well, that's not what Coach Ted teaches me. This is how Coach Ted does it. And the coaches then become frustrated. And I can understand their point. They feel intimidated. And their best athletes come from the club. And they have a problem dealing with that. Because those athletes then are well-trained, believe in their training that they've had for so many years. And you're not telling them what to do. They come back to me. Because the parents see, okay, this kid was running 58 seconds for the 400 when he got here. You have him for a year, and now he's running 62 seconds. He's falling behind. You're not doing anything for him. And that's where the problems begin, and it bubbles over. It's a problem with coaches, club coaches across the country. So many parents don't let their kids run for the high school.
Well, I think that what you're doing is outstanding.
Thank you.
And I could say that one of your kids, one of the kids that you're going to coach, I can imagine one of them going to the Olympics someday.
That's my dream.
I can see it because you gave me the list of countries. Was Kenya on there? You know,
because I had a Kenyan 2 years ago. She was a star in Peekskill. Right now, she got a scholarship to Binghamton, a track scholarship. She ran for Binghamton, but she opted for her education. She's now working on her master's in social science or something.
There
like
you go. See?
She still lives here in Peekskill, Chelsea Ogindo. Right. She's a Kenyan.
Shout out to her. Yeah. This is fantastic. Well, I want to talk to you more about this later because I think that you're a star yourself.
No.
And I always say you're the father of Peekskill. You're the peak, because look at what you're doing. 45 kids, please.
Yeah, right.
That's a lot, you know, and you know who they are. You know each one. You know, that's very significant. Thank you so much, though, you know. You know, I just love you so much, and I love this place so much.
Thank you.
It means something to me because it was here that the whole spirit of what you're doing, you actually gave me a little bit of that. And you guys barely knew me,
right?
You know, but you must have seen something. And I really appreciate it a lot.
Yeah.
And I appreciate you coming on the show and letting us, you know, borrow your cafe when it's closed.
Yeah, right.
Just to and we're not indulging. We wanted to feature you, and I'm glad that you
agreed.
Thank
you very much.
I know you're a busy man.
Well, you're part of the Bean Runner family.
Oh, thank you. I'm part of the Bean Runner family.
Like
there you go.
Like your photographer over there.
That's right. Just like, yes, Jim Brooks.
He's part of the Bean Runner family.
He's the man. Yes, he is. We love him. Thank you so much, Ted.
Oh, sure.
Thank you for being on the show. I really appreciate it a lot.
Oh,
and I appreciate this place. And you do wonders for Peekskill. And so much behind the scenes that people need to be aware of.
Yeah, there is.
You know?
But, you know, it's coming along.
It is coming along, and it's fantastic.
Well, yeah. I mean, some of the things we did a couple of years ago during the pandemic, I didn't give my wife enough credit, but what we did during the pandemic was just phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
We fed over 1,000 people free of charge.
Wow. See, there you go.
And she formed a sewing group in the middle of her cancer. She formed a sewing group of 5 women called the Mask Madness, and they sewed at their own expense and donated over 5,000 masks.
There you go, see?
So, you know, that's what makes you a community.
Exactly, and this is what makes it, one of the things that makes the Bean Runner Cafe so unique. Besides the excellent coffee and the fantastic breakfast and lunch and dinner and music. Okay, everybody, thanks so much for coming to visit. And I'm going to come back here to the Bean Runner and talk to Ted Bitter more because he's just an outstanding person. And as promised, as always, I get the most interesting people I can find on the planet. And again, sometimes they're in your own backyard. So thanks for visiting. I'll see you next time. Bye-bye. Thank you for listening to the Energy Stoners Cafe.